Hello again, everybody, and welcome. This is podcast number 20. I'm Julie Knutson. Been a little bit of a delay here for a couple weeks, and I'm sorry about that. Big seminar and a bunch of dog things going on, so I haven't had the time to really sit down and put something together that's worth sitting through and listening to. Again, I want to thank everybody that's listening. We've had an amazing response to this, and I'm just very appreciative and you know, grateful that people find something useful to listen to, and I mean that. So thanks, everybody. Keep on with the suggestions and ideas. I've had some really, really great ones, and I'll do what I can to help everybody out on this. We're going into, for those who compete, into the competitive season, so everybody's kind of busy and getting serious about their dog work. I've had a lot of suggestions, but based on a number of discussions and things that I've had recently and things that I've seen, today's podcast is going to be about dealing with the troubled dog or the dog with issues. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, yay, I hope you never do. But sometimes there are dogs that are in our lives on a personal level and certainly on a performance level if we're trying to do things with them, who seem to be a little bit outside the lines and seem to be a little bit different. They may be hard to train, or they may be kind of confusing, or just you're just not sure what to make them of them. Or maybe you've had a dog that was doing real well for you and then they weren't. Or you got a puppy and you've never had one like this before and you're going, holy cow, I don't even know what to do here. So I want to talk about dealing with dogs that have problems and issues. Really, a lot of the people who encounter this are ones that have done a lot of training. Maybe they haven't trained a lot of dogs, but they've trained all the way and they run in, you know, major league events, you know, or maybe someone else trains the dog for them and they run it and there's all kinds of problems and things. And it's interesting because then you go on my favorite, the internet, and type in your questions and get 400 answers from the keyboard shooters that are out there that know exactly what you should do. It's important. I'd like to distill this topic down for those of you who are interested in this into really its simple things, which is always the thing to do in any kind of, you know, animal work, or, you know, for that matter, any work at all. But to work with animals, you can't use this complicated, I'm in a hurry, I got to figure this out quick, I don't have time, human framework that we tend to be in. We need to distill this down to the way the dog is. So when I'm talking about dogs with problems or, you know, issues, I want to talk about what those kind of things can be first before we start talking about it. And I mean any kind of issues. Everybody, you know, gosh, this dog used to be this, now he's doing that. What kind of problems do we have with dogs? So there are dogs. I'm just going to kind of categorize this. I don't like that, but I just have to do that for this. We're going to kind of put some categories out for what areas I'm talking about. Some dogs that you're working with, that somebody's working with today, one of the things that's very prevalent, and I've mentioned it in a lot of podcasts before, is this ADHD thing with dogs. And that, by that I mean a dog whose attention span is super short and just goes from one thing to another, to another, to another, to another. A lot of times, and I would say even now, probably the majority of the time I see this, it was a little propensity that a little puppy had, and everyone that just let them be a puppy and didn't require and make them kind of focus, even for a little guy, whatever that is, and give them a real strong sense of purpose and not have the highlight of their day be running crazy with whatever, fill in the blank on that. A lot of the ADHD stuff in dogs right now is in them a little bit, and then when we do nothing with them to change that as puppies, then we have a significant problem as we start to train them. So that's one category of problem. I don't know, as part of it is upbringing. Part of it may be diet, because I understand they're associating a lot of human things with some crazy stuff that we inadvertently eat. And, you know, dog food has a lot less regulations on it than what we eat. So there could be a diet component to that. But dogs who just, their attention is just disco ball, just every which way, random, rapid fire all the time. That's one area of dog that can be problematic to own and problematic to train. Then there are dogs that are very much like humans. There are dogs that, and I'm not an expert in human behavioral issues, so I'm not pretending that at all. But as I understand autism, I think that there are dogs, not real commonly, but there are dogs that appear to be similar to autistic. And within my understanding, what that means is those are dogs where a lot of stimulus, or basically sometimes just almost any stimulus, is a little too much for them. It's very hard for them to be somewhere where there's a lot of noise, a lot of dogs, a lot of people, a lot of demands being made on them, a lot of activity. Just like sometimes too much stimulation for people and they kind of shut down, there are dogs that way too. And when people have dogs like that, and I've probably in my years of training, I've probably had about 3 or 4 of those. So I haven't encountered it a lot. But it's very easy with a dog like that to think it's stubborn or stupid. Neither which apply. Okay, so there are autistic dogs. That doesn't mean that you can't work with them and can't train them and can't have things work out for you. But you do need to kind of understand what you have. So that's another issue. There are dogs which, for whatever reason, are extremely clingy, needy kind of dogs, just like there are people that way. So again, for people with getting a puppy and you get a little clingy, needy puppy, some people love that, right? Just like they love clingy, needy somebody, you know, partners, because then you need to pick them up and hold them and reassure them. And if they step on a sticker, you need to pull the sticker out. And you base a lot of times with the puppies this way, you know, it's kind of cool to have a puppy that demands you to be there and needs you and wants you. And then if you're not, they have, air quotes here, separation anxiety. So you can have very needy dogs, and you need to hopefully, instead of feed and grow that and just think it's cute as a puppy and then have a major problem when you're trying to train it or do something with it, and all it wants to do is just not train or stick by you or cry because you're being demanding. So needy, believe it or not, some of you out there with one of those, understand that there are dogs that are that way, like people. And yes, there are things you can do, again, preferably in the puppy stages, to not expand and grow that, but to try, if at all possible, to deal with it and still work into the things you want out of this dog. So needy's another one. Then there are dogs, in terms of problematic dogs, who, on the other end of that spectrum, came into this world really wanting to just be independent. Just like there's some humans that way too. I've had these dogs in for training, and really, say if they have, you know, they're worth training, they do have the talent. They have the talent and the ability and the brains, and they have the stuff it takes to go do the things that we want them to do on, you know, in the house and in performance and in the field. But I've had these guys where literally if I went to the kennel door, and I live in the middle of nowhere, then there's the Platte River's real close, I could open the door and say, "You can go." They wouldn't even turn around and say goodbye. They would just go, never come back, because they would much rather be without a person, without someone telling them what to do. They would much rather just function on their own and take all the dangers of having to feed yourself and protect yourself. There are dogs who do not really care, that are not driven by you and your presence and making you happy. And again, these dogs are misread. Oh, they're stubborn or they're stupid. And really, they're a dog that is clearly telling you that, you know, why don't you just leave me be, because I really don't care to do this with you. So that's another problem or issue thing that some people have with these dogs. Now, there's also dogs, and I can't put good labels on this because I don't really understand it, but there are dogs just like people that have varying degrees of, the best I can call is mental illness. And they just have difficulty functioning. And it's not one of the things I've mentioned already. They have difficulty functioning with demands. You know, some are afraid, some are difficult if there's more than one person. That's difficult. Or if they, you know, have to stay by themselves. That's difficult. Or when you start making demands on them and then increasing the demand as you go through more and more advanced training, they get overwhelmed by it. Or, and then things I can't even think of to tell you, but there's dogs that suddenly are one way, and then they maybe get very, they kind of get depressed, they get very down, they get very disinterested, or they change their personality in some way. Maybe, you know, wilder and more energetic, it may be less, but it was things were one way, and then they're another, and with no change in anything you're doing. So I guess the point I'm trying to make with this is there are dogs, just like with all of us, that have things, they have issues. And sometimes their brain chemistry and brain doesn't work like all the other dogs you've known or any other dog you've known. And they have a lot of, they have things that can happen. And it kind of makes me sad because a lot of times I see dogs that you can tell something's just different. Not necessarily bad, but just different. But what we do as trainers, people training these dogs, when we start working with these dogs, is we have a picture in our mind of, you know, what needs to happen. And then what everyone does is let's get a good training program. You know, whether it's the one I did with the last three dogs I had, or the cool one that some guy referenced on the internet, or I got all of Danny Farmer's DVD series, I'm going to do that. Whatever it is, they get this program, they get this series of steps they're going to go through, and then you start going through the series of steps, because that's what you're supposed to do, right? And but you're going through the steps like you had a dog machine, and that if you do the right steps, everything's going to work. And sometimes it does. And sometimes it doesn't. And that can be, assuming, you know, and like I said, there's a lot of good programs. Buy Danny Farmer's DVD series, follow everything he does. Shoot, that's who I learned, everything I learned from in the beginning. But his steps are awesome. But he also is an extremely talented person that is aware of a lot of things with his dogs. And that's what you need to do to make anybody's program work, is really you need to take a step back. And instead of rush out and start going through the steps, there are some things of which you need to be aware. And one of those is the reality of your dog. Now, I already gave a whole podcast on the student-teacher thing, right? How fast you process and how, and that's one thing, and that's real important. But it, perhaps even more important is this this element that I'm talking about. And I'll give you a good example of it. You may have heard of the horse whisperer. They made a movie about him. There's books. It was Idaho or somewhere in the Rocky Mountain West where this man could do things with horses that nobody else could. And he did it all without brutality and all that stuff. And his story, if I understand it correctly, is that he had an extremely difficult childhood. Very, very tough on him. Very unfair. And just, and it made, you know, you can go a lot of ways when that happens to you. And he became hypersensitive. And anyone that's ever been in a bad situation growing up as a child and been in a situation that was pretty tough, you become one of two things. You either become just kind of a rogue outlaw, or you become hypersensitive to the presence of others and their body language and just the energy that they're putting out and what they say and what they do. And I know this from firsthand experience myself, which is one of the reasons that this is such an important topic to me. But he'd been through that, and so he had a genuine empathy for the animals with which he was working, because he knew what it was like when no one looked at you and nobody cared. Nobody saw who you were, and frankly, nobody cared. They just exerted themselves, and you were victimized. And to be real honest, a lot of dog training that I see, however unintentional, is people that are saying, all right, these are the steps I need to go through, and this is my desired outcome, and this is what I'm going to do. And when things don't go the way you want, and the dog doesn't do what he's supposed to do, then we have a problem. So it's a highly advisable, one, to be aware of the fact that dogs have a lot of these issues. And it would be very good for you, and certainly for your dog, if you're having problems, if the dog has got, you know, some kind of behavioral deal, or the dog has changed, or there's some other things I'm going to talk about in a minute that are happening that make you very unhappy, to take a step back first, and make sure that you are clear on not only yourself, but on this animal. So I'm going to talk about a few of these things kind of isolated one at a time. And this is a huge topic, so I'm going to kind of hit the highlights. My goal is to see, just get people to think about this a little bit. So let's take, for example, I'm going to take the autistic dog. There are literally dogs, I'm just going to use this as an example, who a lot of stimulation is very difficult for them. Now, this does not mean that they have to live in a cave, but it does mean that when you're dealing with them and when you're trying to teach them things, even if it's just the behavior around your home, much less the more advanced stuff, that you need to stop and recognize this dog telling you that it is overwhelmed by what's happening. And let me give an example. I had one not too long ago. It's a great big female. She had been raised by, her puppy years were out in a stall next to some horses with other stalls. And she never ever got a lot of human time. She had some. It wasn't like an abused animal or anything. But she just spent a lot of quiet time and time just in a real quiet place. And interestingly, I don't know whether that wound up happening because they did that because she was better that way than when they brought her in the house. You know, maybe her autism kind of led them to keep her somewhat isolated, or whether that semi-isolation thing, just made her more that way. But when I got her, And this is to give everybody an idea what to think about. When I put her in a kennel, I have a big rows of kennels, two of them, and I had her in the middle, she would just fret. She would not relax. She wouldn't get on her platform and lay down. She would fret and look down at the ground. And she just looked at the cement, just looked down at that all the time. And I can't tell you why, but I moved her to the kennel at the end where she had her own yard out the back. I put her there, and there was less of that kind of behavior. So she did better when there weren't dogs all around her and action going back and forth and back and forth. And she was very happy when she was out in the yard by herself or with another dog. She was good with that. And when I would get her out to work with her, she was immediately, because I was changing things, you know, we were coming out of the yard or coming out of the kennel, now she was just nervous. She was just nervous. She didn't really do anything noticeable. She would just stare back down at the ground instead of me and just look like, okay, I'm ready for this. So body language, where she was looking, really told a lot of stories. So I had to adjust a lot of things that I did. I didn't let her get out of having to go do the work, but I had to be aware of the fact that this dog, it was hard for her to walk down an entire row of kennels with all the dogs making a fuss and jumping around and being excited like they are. That was hard for her. So when we'd go out the building and get outside away from that, that was the good teaching place. So I had to be careful with her and teach her. And I couldn't just take her in a big wild environment and then go right outside and start teaching. So I taught her, like, got her through force fetch, collar conditioning, retrieving, doing all the stuff, by understanding that when she needed to learn something, we had to be in a real quiet place where there wasn't something that made her shut down. So did she function? Yes. But I would have thought that this dog was a big lump. I would have thought that she was just, there wasn't much dog in there, had I not noticed the way, where she'd look and what she'd do. So just paying attention to very small things like that kind of led me to believe. Now, fortunately, this wasn't the first one of these I'd ever had, so I began to get this autistic thing where if there's a lot of stimulation, this dog is just shut down. So I doubt very many of you listening to this have an autistic dog. But if you stop and just look at the dog and pay attention for a moment, and never mind your list of steps that you have to go through, but just see the dog and look at the body language, and watch where is this dog looking? When dogs are looking at me and jumping up and down, I know they want to come out. When they are looking at the ground and not jumping up and down, they don't want to come out. So since I had done nothing to this dog to make her dread anything, that told me a lot about that. So that's just one of those things that you need to pay attention to. Now, the clingy, needy dogs, I want to talk about that. Clingy, needy dogs, and some people enjoy that. And when you heal and sit, and they need to sit on your foot, and they need to stand on your foot, I've heard of so many things. You know what it means when they put their foot on you, don't you? And I've heard all kinds of stuff what it means. It can be different with different dogs. But clingy dogs, they have to touch you. They lean on you. They want you to do the work for them. So if you're doing basic obedience, they let you pull them. You have to make them sit. Then you have to make them heal. Then you have to make them sit. And even when you enforce it so that they start doing it on their own, then they make you enforce it. In other words, they're requiring that you service them all the time. And you just think that they're slow learners. And they're not slow learners. They're just dogs that are making you service them and touch them and respond to them. And then it's all about them because they're very needy. So it's the same thing. You go in a kennel, and the minute they just turn around and hit the door, you can't possibly leave me in this kennel or this crate or this vehicle. Oh, no, 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 I cannot be without you. And people are, oh, well, no, I better not do that. I'll go sit with them, or I'll get in the seat with them. I've seen that. Or I'll just get them out here with me because they can't. That needy, needy, needy thing. And people let the dog, let it work. And so a lot of even though the dog genuinely feels needy, I'm not dismissing that the dog feels that way. But when you continue to feed that, then it continues to grow. And then you have to always do all this stuff. And you're never going to have a dog that is going to be able to work independently of you, which is what you need in regular life and certainly in performance and certain in hunting. You know, if you got a dog, they got to go out there in the water or the ice. They got to go out in the hot field that has stickers and they have to go do things. And if you just feed constantly their need and let them lean on you and let them put their foot on you and let them, you know, constantly make you do all the work with the leash and this, then they're going to be very dependent when you want them to do other things. So that's not an autistic dog. That's a dog that's happy to be with you, just loves it. You're just doing all of the work. So you need to sit there and look at that and say, all right, I need to stop doing all of the work for this dog. And there isn't like a method. All right, whenever you're doing all the work, this is what you do. What you need to do is right off the bat say, you know, I've shown this dog what heel and sit means 15 times. Now it's time for, even if the dog is a very slow learner, heel and sit is probably something that the dog knows. Now, through enforcement with leashes and other non-touchy things, I am going to teach this dog it has to function on its own without touching me, leaning on me, or making me do all the work. Including sometimes it's going to have to get in a crate and stay there and be there by itself. And if it's going to get needy and whatever, then you're going to have to do some things to teach the dog a lot. You know what I like to do on that when I have dogs that are worried about crates? I work them real hard mentally and physically so that they're very tired, and then I put them in the crate and they're kind of happy to be there. But the point is the needy stuff. You need to be aware that when you're doing all the work for the dog all the time, you are creating a problem with a dog that's happy to have you do that. So you can take some actions on that thing. Now, the dog that doesn't really give a hoot about you. Right? Now, people think these dogs are stubborn. And they don't, and sometimes stupid. Stubborn and stupid, I hear that if somebody can't train their dog very effectively, it is, of course, the fault of the dog. And they are either stubborn or they're stupid. But for those dogs, and they're not uncommon, whose motivation is entirely within. It is their own entertainment, their own satisfaction, their own desires, their own just daily life breathing. Humans are not that big of a deal. To many dogs, and I know this is hard for some people to hear, we are nothing more than service. We provide food, nice bed, stuff to do that's fun, you know, occasional touching, it's all right, but not too much. So we are just service providers, and we love them. They're so wonderful, and we buy them all kinds of stuff and do all kinds of everything because we love our dogs so much. And if you saw the bubble over your dog's head, it'd be go like, yeah, where's dinner? Let's go. Because they're just not geared to care a whole lot about what you think. So sometimes we get those dogs, and I've had a fair number of them in for training, and I can't use our relationship very much, which is personally how I like to train dogs, because we're buddies and we're a team. There's not a lot of team stuff here. So that's okay. There's some very talented dogs that are that way. So you quit trying to make it be the lovey-dovey thing, because they just look at you like a sap, really. I was like, oh, I'll just do this, and then they'll give me more toy, or they'll give me something to eat, or they'll let me out so I can get the heck away. So when it's that way, understand that they aren't going to do the team thing a whole lot with you. So just make it like a business deal, like you would in real life. Okay, here's the deal. You know, I'm going to feed you every night and be good to you and tell you I care about you and exercise you and make sure you have all the good things in life that my dog would have. And in return, this is what you're going to do. You're going to, you know, heal and sit and come when I call and bring the duck back to me, whatever it is you have the dog for. You're going to do those things. You're going to hunt. You're going to hunt in the range I want you to. You're not going to chase stuff. Whatever rules you have, just clearly show the dog. This is what you got to do. And you don't make it a big, you know, oh, I'll give you, just not the personal thing. Just kind of a business deal. Do this, do that. I'll be fair to you. I'll communicate everything. And then I'm going to require that you do it once I know you understand. And then when we're done, you can go back in the kennel or the yard or whatever you do, and you're happy and I'm happy, and you have a clear understanding of the relationship. It's not going to be the lovey-dovey clingy thing, and they don't really care if you're happy or not, but they do if you show them what you want and then you hold that standard and require, then they'll do it. So you can have those dogs, and they can have a good life, and they can be good performance dogs, and know that they're doing it because you told them they had to. And that's just kind of part of the deal. If you want them to be something else, they're not. You know, just like you and me, they are exactly what they are. Now, when dogs have the attention deficit thing, which again, I'm not sure how much of that is upbringing and how much of it is diet and how much of it is breeding, but that's something that can definitely, if they're not crazy, you know, literally, you know, some dogs are truly kind of psychopathic. Then what you have to do, preferably don't raise the dog to just be wild and crazy. Remember, little puppies, whatever they do most is what grows. So if running around in a mindless fashion, being constantly catered to, is what that dog does, then you're going to have a dog that's going to be very hard to be brought in to focus. So don't let them run wild and crazy and not have a purpose when they're little. And again, I've had whole podcasts on that. But when you have a dog that's very ADHD, that means you cannot be that way at all. So if you have a dog who has great difficulty focusing, understand that. Okay, this dog has great difficulty focusing. Therefore, when I am working with it, if I focus and then don't pay attention, and then I'm back in paying attention, and then I'm on the phone, and then I'm back in paying attention, I am teaching this dog not to have continuous focus and attention on something. So when you work a dog that is that way, if you only can work it for 2 minutes, but for 2 minutes you can keep your attention on that dog while you are teaching it something, then only do it for 2 minutes. But if you do, okay, this dog is real ADD. I need to work it for a long time. But you have sporadic attention because you're, again, your phone buzzed, somebody said something, then you saw your shoe was untied. You are teaching this dog about intermittent attention. So when you have one of those, you need to be Mr. or Miss Focus. And if you have to shorten your training periods to just a couple minutes at a time, do that. That is better than a longer training session where you're basically teaching them, you know, hey, sometimes we're there and sometimes we're not. That's huge. So if your dog's ADD, it might be partly because of you. And if you don't like that, then you have to address your attention so that you can do it with that dog. I guarantee you that's the way that is. It's just such a big deal right now. It's so prevalent. Nothing wrong with a 2-minute training session unless you're running a 300-yard blind. Then I have to be a little bit longer. But even I've talked to some of the really good field trial guys who have had personal problems with this themselves, the ADHD thing. And literally when they're running a long blind, and you know, those guys run 500-yard long blinds, where they're on the blind and then all of a sudden they're on something about, oh yeah, tomorrow I got to do this with this dog. And in the time that they just detached from running that blind, their dog got 25 yards offline in a bad, you know, the whole thing was kind of toast right there. So this can happen to anybody doing anything with these dogs. But then everybody's mad at the dog. You know, this dog got 25 yards left. He's out of the water. Oh, I'm so upset because you didn't address the problem the minute that it happened because you weren't there. So the ADHD thing can be solved only if you are not that way and you can maintain your focus the entire time. And you guys, when I say entire time, I mean entire time in the head and in the shoes of that dog the whole time you're working it. Because if you ever watch the really great dog trainers, they are completely into that. So when you have a dog with attention problems, you need to go get the mirror out and see what you can do about addressing those things. Now, the other category that I talked about was dogs that have changed their behavior and things are funny. You know, they were doing real well and now they're not doing real well. And this is extraordinarily common. And one of the big examples of this, well, let me say something before I get into that. This happens a lot. And you know, it happens with people too. If you've ever heard about somebody or known somebody that was going along just fine and then got real kind of lost their motivation or got real depressed or kind of changed and they don't really know why. And there's stuff that happens like that. And it's that way with dogs. And people, they can, you know, a lot of times you can take stuff out. You can be frustrated with your dog and be angry or maybe a little unfair or maybe just give up and get, you know, dogs know when you give up on them too. And that they feel the same way that you would. If I just gave up on you and said, I can't train this person, they just can't, they're not even worth it. So dogs know some stuff and they have things happen in their lives. And I don't always know where it comes from. But what I can tell you a little bit about dogs is they communicate to us all the time. Dogs tell you their story all the time. Like I said about the autistic dog that just looked at the ground all the time. We just look at the ground. Okay, that dog was saying, I don't want to see the world. Literally was saying that. So when dogs tell us their stories, and if something changes, then if you can be real specific and notice what has changed about that, and then just think about it. So dogs tell us when they're upset. They tell us when they're confused. They tell us when they're overwhelmed. They tell us when they're not okay. But, and everybody agrees with that. Yeah, that's true. But did you ever think about how they do that? How do dogs tell you that something is not right? So they can't walk up, right? Dog can't walk up and kind of tap you on the knee and go, hey, listen, bud. You know, you have been so far over my head and you've been too demanding and you're getting after me and you're doing a lot of corrections on me and I don't have a clue what it is. And, you know, I wave the white flag. We need to start over. They don't tell you that kind of stuff, but they do. But you have to apply the words to it. For example, right, the dog that stared at the ground when I went over there. If you go out to get your dog to train and they turn the other direction, okay, that means, take literal, right? That means I don't want to go with you. Now, that could be for a lot of reasons. Maybe they don't feel well, you know, maybe you were unfair the last time. Maybe somebody else did something to them you didn't even see, and so they just think going out, loading up to go somewhere is bad. There could be a lot of things. Maybe most of all, when dogs are upset, and by upset, that could be, you know, just where they're confused, where they're tired, where you're asking them to do something that they really have no desire to do or no interest, or whether you haven't taught them clearly enough, whether you are being unfair, whether you are using too much pressure when you train them, whether you are making things very unclear. Okay, dogs, you know, when they're not doing what you are showing them how to do, or at least think you are, when they're not doing it, or whether they're showing no interest in it, okay, that's a first sign of a problem. When that doesn't get addressed, when you don't go, gosh, whatever it was, you know, maybe I haven't taught well enough, or maybe I'm going too slow and boring the heck out of this dog, you know, or maybe I'm asking it to do stuff that it is clearly telling me I don't really want to do this. If you've looked at that and you still don't, you know, you say, no, this seems okay, or you just ignore it, you don't look at that at all, right? And so the dog has told you all of this stuff. They become more upset, just like you would. If you had a parent who you're trying to tell them something, you know, listen, I don't want to be an opera singer. And they're just bent to make you an opera singer. And you say, you know, gosh, Dad, I don't want to be an opera singer. That's just not my thing. And they're driving you to your opera class. You get upset, right? Because you're telling Dad this and Dad's acting like you didn't say a word because Dad wants this for you and he's not paying any attention. So then you feel worse. So when dogs feel worse, when they've told you whatever it is they're trying to tell you and you don't do anything, then it goes from being an emotional, psychological thing to a physical thing. So when dogs are upset and they can't do anything about it, then they get... Usually one of the first things that shows up is something in the digestive tract. They get upset stomachs, they get diarrhea, they get a lot of that kind of stuff going. Really the digestive tract. They can salivate. A lot of times that's anxiety or nervousness. And then the diarrhea and the upset stomach. Then you take them to the vet when they have this, they've been having diarrhea and you feed a good food. And then the vets look at them and they don't realize all the stuff that's happened in training. And not all vets are behavioralists. So they look at them and say, okay, you know, the dog's allergic to the grain in your dog food, or the dog's allergic to chicken or whatever things. We have food allergies. So then you get the you know, shark teeth and eel tail food that the dog must eat, and it's always like four times more than whatever you were feeding before. And there's a place for all that stuff. There's a place for those foods. But a lot of times, the root cause of this physical problem has nothing to do with what's in the food bag. But since nobody knows anything else, it must be. So then they go that route. And then the diarrhea is a little better. Well, it's probably better because you stopped doing whatever you were doing. But it's going to, you know, come up again with some other food. Or, you know, they've got some, all dogs in my world have Giardia in their intestinal tract because they're out in all kinds of stuff. And when their immune system, when they're healthy and strong, just like us, when their immune system's good, the titer of that stuff in their intestine is low and they're fine. And when their immune system is compromised through stress from whatever source, then it doesn't fight that stuff in their intestines and the titer goes up. Then you take them to the vet and they go, oh, you got Giardia, so now we're going to start the antibiotics and it fixes it for a while, but it's not the root cause. So dogs often physically tell you when they're upset, and then it winds up being real expensive vet bills. Now, sometimes all that stuff happens and you need to get the antibiotics or you need to get the special food. But a lot of times you don't, and I've seen that so much, because the dog is now manifesting its stress over stuff physically. But we're not going to pay any attention to that either. Another way that dogs express, and they don't do it intentionally. I mean, if I went to your house and you know, you made me mad, and you wouldn't listen to me, all right, I might, I don't know, flatten your tire. Right? I would do something intentionally. Dogs don't do that. I know we assign that to their behavior all the time. But when a dog is upset, all right, then they get diarrhea. Now, when nothing happens, or other deals, or sometimes when dogs get upset, they do like wild animals do. And that is, they may start doing things they hadn't done before with their urine or their feces. Sometimes they'll start urinating on stuff that they never had before. Or they start defecating places they never had before. Well, now you're really mad, right? They're sitting here just full of stress over this complete lack of communication and lack of understanding that started in your training and your interactions. And now they're doing this because they're upset. Just like the coyotes. When coyotes come to our house and do stuff, they go right on the line where we run dogs. Or they go right on the driveway. They go right where they're communicating with us something. You know, I am here. That's what the coyotes do. They don't go out there where we can't see it. They intentionally do it somewhere so that we know their presence. So dogs also tend to use their body functions to kind of let somebody know they're present. I am here. Hello, see me. And many times. So when they're stressed out and you haven't been listening to them, and then they start that, what happens generally? We get even madder. Now we're even madder, this stupid dog. Not only is this dog stupid and expensive, but now he's obnoxious. And so the thing can spiral out of control because you never noticed in the very beginning when you were overwhelming this dog by asking too much or boring them or asking something they didn't have to give. Not always. But when things change, when they change from one behavior to another, there's a reason for it. And it's not just because they're a rotten, stupid, or stubborn dog. It's their only way of telling you. Sometimes dogs, because they have this energy and this pent-up frustration, they chew on things that they maybe didn't before. Usually it's something really expensive and new, like your new sprinkler system or some beautiful landscaping that you have. If that wasn't something that they've always done all their lives and then they get a little bit destructive, again, they've got all this energy and they're doing something with it. See me, hear me, hello, I'm here. They're not usually just bad dogs. If they were always a bad dog and they're still being a bad dog, then they're a bad dog. But when stuff changes, it's usually this kind of a scenario that goes along. And then people misread it and assign all these causes to the dogs, and then they just make it worse. So then you get after this dog more, and then more things happen, and pretty soon you just give up. Or you quit, or give the dog to somebody, or just write it off, or just go, well, that's the kind of dog he is, I'll just leave him in the kennel. And so problem dogs are generally, are often completely misread. Now, what about solutions? If I were listening to this, I'd be going, what about solutions on this? The first thing is for you to be aware that these guys are not evil things, and they have different IQs, but they're not really stubborn unless we teach them to just ignore us and do whatever they want. It's all on clarity about you being focused and being aware of your influence. And above all, the dog is telling you things. Remember, like the needy ones that's sitting on you and letting you lug them all over the place? You know, you've got to notice that. You've got to notice what the dog is doing and kind of isolate the behavior and look at it. That's important. And if you're going to be training a dog, you should have this ability. And you may not have it sharply tuned right now, but you can get it that way just by thinking. Maybe before every training session, go out, think first about what it is you want to do, how you're going to do it, and what you want, you know, want to communicate to the dog. And then when you're finished with your training session, sit there and go, all right, what happened? What did this dog tell me? How well am I doing? The dog always tells you how well you did. You know, did you remain focused? If you're not sure, that means you didn't. You know, because when you're not focused, you can't be aware that you're not focused. So if you're not sure, it means you weren't. So there's something else to work on. And those are going to be your biggest sources of problems. Because you have a X retriever does not mean you have a dog that necessarily wants to do this. And then there's certain degrees of how much they want to do it. They'll never want it more than fundamentally is in them to want. So you need to find out what that is and understand that. And you can't go past that no matter how much you would like to. So there's a big reality thing with these dogs. If you have a dog that has been doing really well and you're really satisfied with it and then things changed, and they seem to get unhappy, and you're not sure what it is, and you don't want it to spiral into that bad thing where they just get really bad and you get really mad and it goes nowhere. One of the biggest answers I've ever found for that, when you're not sure what you're doing and they're not sure what's happening and you know things are a little bit wrong, I'll tell you what is one of the most surefire ways to fix that thing that I've ever seen. And that is structured singular exercise together. Now, I know a lot of people, that is not their first choice of things. They want some kind of gizmo and trick with a leash and 3 minutes that you can do. But when you have an animal that is not okay, and I even physically, assuming they're healthy enough to get up and, you know, get out and do stuff, when you have a dog that's not okay emotionally, or not okay psychologically, or you know, you're starting to get all of this funny digestive stuff that they didn't used to have and now they have. If I'm going to throw out the ideal, hypothetical ideal, and you can adjust this to something that works for you. But if you could take this dog that's not doing okay and you're not sure what it is, but you feel like you're losing ground, put him on a leash and go for a 30-minute run. And if you don't run, try it. If you do, take your dog on leash, not off leash. This is not a free-for-all, a run. If you could go out, and if you can't run, you can get a bicycle. And if you can't get a bicycle, walk. Because if you're hunting, you got to walk, right? So walk, and walk rapidly, and do it for at least 30 minutes. You know, and if you can get it up more than that, if you could go out every day and do that. This is not the puppy walk where dogs are exploring and learning about the world and themselves. This is an exercise deal. Put that dog on a leash and you head out. And you go out 15 minutes and come back 15 minutes. Or I don't care, around the track or around the football field. And then put the dog away. If you could do that for a month, that does miracles with dogs. I have saved dogs' lives with that, who were getting so morose and so, for reasons I'm not even sure what it was. And this is a dog I'm training. I'm going, gosh, I can't have this. I don't know what to do. I was completely confused. So I took that dog on a run with me every day. He wound up being a fully titled dog. He's on the dog on the back of my, anybody that has my book, there's a dog that's kissing a guy in the neck. It's that dog right there. I mean, that he wound up with all the titles, charmed life, phenomenal animal, great guy, and he was going to die. He was literally not eating and had bloody diarrhea and was so, he wouldn't even get up to go train. So you wouldn't think of taking a dog like that running, but I did. And within a month or something, I don't know exactly how it worked, but that structured exercise together, just the two of us, I don't know whether it gave him imminent reason to live or a real purpose, but it completely turned that dog around. And I'll say I've done that with other breeds and dogs that weren't performance dogs and had it work miracles. So that's something, if you can possibly do that, if you have a relationship with your dog or some trouble and you can't be sure what to do and you're willing to go get some exercise, that's a magical thing. So it's a big topic. I hope I helped a little bit with it. I hope at least I got you to think if you're having some trouble. Yeah, just like humans, you know, these guys, man, they have good times and bad times. They're confused. Sometimes they get in a slump. Sometimes stuff happens. They're rarely just stubborn, dumb dogs, and they don't just become evil out of nowhere. And they don't just suddenly develop allergies to things for no reason unless it's a stress-related thing. So instead of going after the pharmaceutical expensive way of treating symptoms, I strongly suggest go back to the root cause of things. And it's generally in the relationship between the two of you and something being a little misread or somebody not taking quite enough time. So think about that horse whisperer who just did miracles with horses nobody else could do anything with because he knew what it was like to be ignored and not seen. And he would not do that with those animals. And so he would look at them and see what was there and address what kind of place they came from. So I offer that for number 20. I've got a lot more that I can do, and I'm going to try, and even though the competitive season's coming up, to do the best I can. I thank y'all so much for your participation and your interest in this stuff. I appreciate it, and we'll be back soon.